Previously on X-Men.
Coming to you live from the Uncanny Valley, it's the Movie Change-Up Podcast Disney Plus Weekly Review. Where each week, I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host, Tristan Mayer, break down This Week in Disney Plus. We took a little bit of a month off, just kind of had a lot going on, and honestly, there wasn't much in Disney Plus to talk about. Basically, Moon Knight was the only thing going on, and honestly, it's the first thing we're going to talk about, but I think Tristan and I are both in agreement that show is better off as a kind of binge show than a week-to-week show. So this episode, we're going to be breaking down, giving a recap of Season 1 of Moon Knight. We're going to be talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, a preview of that. That comes out next Friday. Some news regarding Daredevil. And then finally, we're going to be breaking down something that dropped yesterday, and that is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, the movie. Going to be giving you kind of our thoughts on that. Tristan, it's been about a month, so this is almost more Disney Plus monthly review. But what have been your thoughts on this month, I guess, in Disney Plus?
Yeah, life kind of caught up to us for a second, so we took a little bit of time off, but I think we picked a good time to take off. You know, we're coming back for Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that's something we've both been really excited for. And Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers ended up being a really surprise, I think, for a lot of people, so I thought it'll be a really fun conversation. And yeah, it was interesting to watch one of these Marvel shows week to week, because we're going right into Moon Knight as our first topic, so I wanted to focus on that a little bit and say that was a really unique experience, because, like, if you've been following this channel, we've been doing week to week coverage of every other Marvel show and essentially doing episode by episode reviews, what do you think is going to happen next, that kind of a thing. And this show leaned into that a bit and had some of that mystery, those cliffhangers and that kind of stuff that we would have been talking about, but I think it had a lot more fun with this show when I was able to just kind of sit back and be like, okay, let's just take on the adventure, let's see what happens. And like Joseph, we binged to watch most of this season, and I think that helped a lot too. So yeah, it was a nice couple weeks off here, but with Obi-Wan Kenobi, we're gonna be back here week to week, I'm sure. So probably for a while, I think.
Yeah, definitely, at least through the run of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Definitely a show I'm very excited for. So let's get right into it. Let's break down Moon Knight. Show stars Oscar Isaac. It's obviously a kind of show set in the MCU. Surprisingly, very little to no MCU connection, which I think was generally a positive for this show. And it just kind of tracked this guy. As you kind of discovered, he had multiple personality disorder. One of them was able to access the power of the Moon God and kind of showcase his power in that way. Tristan, what were your general thoughts on Moon Knight before we kind of go deeper into it?
As a whole, I thought it was pretty solid. I think the fact that it's so standalone helped it a lot, because it wasn't like, oh, when's the next cameo, and what's that going to mean for Secret Invasion or whatever the next storyline is going to be, and what does that mean about the other plots? You know, it was completely standalone. There were no cameos. Like, there were small little Marvel references here and there. I think they, like, name-dropped the Avengers once or something like that. But it's not like, oh, here comes Falcon, here comes Blade. And I know the writers have talked about that they were originally going to have a couple of crossovers in a couple of the episodes here, and they ended up stepping back and cutting those and saying, okay, let's make this a genuine standalone story. And I think that helped a lot in terms of the quality of the show, because you weren't necessarily tied down by the other storylines. But I also think it hurt a tiny bit in terms of how much people are engaging with it and talking about it, because the show got a lot of views, but I felt like from social media it wasn't being talked about nearly as much as the other shows were. I think a lot of that was because it wasn't necessarily as tied in and engaged with the ongoing plot as compared to other shows have been. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for an entry level show for the Marvel movies and you don't want to see, like, okay, I gotta watch 10 different shows and 5 different movies to understand what's going on, this is a perfect spot where it's like, okay, you want to get a cool standalone story with this character, you're getting that. There's some fun adventure. There's some Indiana Jones vibes. You know, we've reviewed National Treasure around here once. It had some vibes of that too at points. And I think it was a fun time, but it's, as of right now, kind of in the middle of my Marvel ranking, because it didn't quite reach for a lot of the heights that its premise kind of set up for it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I like the difference of it, but it wasn't so different that it kind of lost itself. And the difference, as it, like, kind of what WandaVision was, where a lot of the different episodes of it, those first couple episodes, I feel like you could completely skip and you don't miss anything. Where you can't really miss an episode of Moon Knight. You have to watch all of the episodes for it to make sense and be understandable. But I think I have this weird relationship with the show because I didn't watch it necessarily week to week. I would let a few episodes get away from me, and then I'd watch two or three in a row. And as I was watching the finale, I thought it was the penultimate episode. I thought I still had one more to go. So I watch it, and I watch, and well, I'll give the spoiler here of the post-credit scene with the cab driver that a lot of Moon Knight comic book fans were waiting for. I was watching that, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see how that plays in the next episode. And then I was looking it up, and I'm like, oh, that was the season finale. So I kind of have a weird relationship with the finale because I went into it not realizing that it was the finale. Yeah, it weirdly left me wanting more. I was excited for what's going to happen next week, only to find out that next week may be a year or two away. So
if ever, because I know there's been a bit of a discrepancy between if this is a series finale or a season finale and what the future of the character really is. But yeah, I mean, that ending kind of makes you feel like they're definitely going to at least bring the character back, whether it's in his own show or somebody else's.
Or maybe he appears in Blade or something like that.
Yeah, and there's a Halloween special allegedly coming up this year. I would imagine that's a good spot for him to come in. And I thought it was interesting, the structure of the show, too, because the beginning really starts off leaning in on the mystery, kind of the disorientation of, like, oh, who is this guy? What's really going on with his, like, memory lapses? What is going on with his past? And I had a good time with that, even though I didn't know Moon Knight and I knew his origin story. And I knew, like, eventually what the answers were going to be. I felt like it was a pretty good mystery at the beginning where you're in Steven's shoes and you're kind of trying to figure out, like, what's going on with my life. what are all these weird things happening that aren't normal? And the kind of slow build of that being delivered over the course of a couple episodes, I think, was something that was effective because it was a TV show. And in a movie, that would have been, like, you know, 15 minutes maybe. And the fact that they had a couple of hours really let them kind of build out the opening act of the story here, and I think that opening act really helped a lot with the rest of the show.
Yeah, I definitely think this is something that would have flopped as a movie just because I don't think they would have been able to convey the whole multiple personality thing as well. I think you needed more hours to get that across. Yeah, because I went into Moon Knight, he had been described as Batman with multiple personality disorder, which is kind of how I understood the character, and that's similar. Like, I can understand why people would describe it that way, but it's not, like, a clear ripoff. You know, it definitely is his own distinct character with his own distinct origin.
But yeah, especially this show went out of its way to kind of differentiate them and make him not like Batman.
Yeah.
You know, Steven is not an old British butler in this.
Yeah, so I'm very curious to see what they do moving forward. I like the... I wasn't sure how I felt about the kind of visual effects of the moon god Khonshu, but I think the more I saw it, the more it worked for me. And then when I saw the other gods that actually looked believable, I don't remember their names, but like that hippo goddess, like I thought, especially for a TV show, that effect looked really good. And I think one of the things that the MCU has over Star Wars is because it's set in the real, essentially the real world. It's obviously not supposed to be exactly our universe, but it's set on Earth, that they're able to shoot on location more for cheaply because they don't have to necessarily always build their own sets. And so I think so far, the MCU shows have looked better than the Star Wars live action shows, but the visual effects here with the hippo I thought looked really good, and all of the non-real world stuff, but they can also devote more of their budget to some of that stuff because they don't have to spend so much of it on building sets.
Yeah, Marvel seems to have a weird logic of visual effects where it's like random things like cars in the background or like some action shots will just look terrible, but then when they have to put the money out and really show, it ends up looking pretty good. Like that hippo god looked great, and I think Khonshu actually did look pretty good. And I think it's also easier to give a pass to, like, big mythical beings. Like, I don't know what Khonshu should look like, you know? So when I see something like that, and it's, like, this bone head floating above this body, I'm like, okay, makes sense to me. you know, but it's easier to spot a bad car, you know, or like a, I thought sometimes the actual Moon Knight suit looked pretty bad when he was supposedly climbing around doing action sequences, yeah. And I was like, that is not Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
That is some kind of like computer creature created by Oscar to look like Oscar Isaac, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. One of the things, you know, I thought F. Murray Abraham was a great choice for the voice of Moon Knight. Honestly, for the first entire episode, I thought it was Liam Neeson. Just because they have a similar voice in it. So, I don't know if you've seen the movie A Monster Calls, where Liam Neeson is a voice in that as well. And I like it just sounded like the same voice to me, so I just thought it was Liam Neeson. I'm like, oh, Liam Neeson's finally joined the MCU. This is really cool. We got an even more Star Wars. And then I saw the credits at the end of Khonshu, voiced by F. Murray Abraham. I'm like, oh, well, not Liam Neeson, but I still think the voice was a perfect match for kind of the vibe they were going for. It reminded me of the Bendu from Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, I was thinking, it was Oscar Isaac, the first episode I watched it, I was thinking they were doing like a Venom situation. They're like, okay, you also do the voice. multiple voices. But yeah, I thought Oscar Isaac as a lead was really good too. He like, it's easy when you have multiple personality performance to really like camp it up and make it very ridiculous and have all the personalities be like really large. And I don't think he went that way at all. Like, obviously there's some goofy accents, but I didn't feel like he was overacting when he was Steven or overacting when he was Mark. They all felt like pretty natural performances that were kind of defined characters.
Yeah, and you definitely need a talent like Oscar Isaac for a role like this, because there were moments where there weren't cuts and he was going from Steven Grant to some of the other personalities without a cut, and you could see it in the face. He didn't need to change his voice at all, and you knew this was his. I mean, a lot of times they did like the eyes rolling back in the head, but there were other times when they didn't do that. And you could still tell that the character changed. It reminded me a lot of Christopher Reeve in the 1970s Superman, where he would just change his posture, and you could kind of see, like, this is no longer Clark Kent, this is Superman.
That's a good comparison. I think that's a really great scene to compare. Like, the fact that he's able to do so much with the physical performance, and the obviously comparison is Split, where James McAvoy took on, like, all his personalities in one movie, and I like that movie. It's a fun rompy ride, you know, an M. Night Shyamalan goof, but the acting in that is can occasionally be a little bit large, and the personalities are, like Patricia and all the other characters are all really, really kind of large performances from James McAvoy, and I think this is a bit more what an actual multiple personality person would kind of be like, you know, where they're not like being huge and obnoxious, they're just kind of like, I don't know, they have these slight alters in their behavior and things like that that make them distinct people.
Yeah, definitely. And I like that we kind of dabbled into the trauma of some of this character and why they may be the way they are, which is very much kind of the trigger point for a lot of people with multiple personality. They kind of had some trauma in their life and they created a personality that would kind of absorb the trauma and take the trauma, so the main personality or the real personality wouldn't have to go through that. They'd create someone stronger than them, so it kind of works and makes sense.
I like that it was grounded too in like a real situation and a real trauma. They didn't try and give him like an MCU-ified origin where it's like, oh, he saw the snap of Thanos and he lost his mind and now or it's like, oh, you know, he's bleeding. I saw some random theory online that like, oh, maybe these multiple personalities are really like his different variants across multiple universes all blend together, and it's like, oh no, it's just like an actual human origin story to an actual real mental illness. You know, I'm glad they didn't try and make it too comic booky.
Yeah, there's a small spoiler for something that may happen in Thor Love and Thunder, where in the comics Jane Foster gets cancer, and that's kind of why she goes and tries to be Lady Thor and all that. And I've seen theories of like, oh, what if like the radiation from the snap gave her cancer or something? And I'm like, why do we need a comic book origin story for cancer? Why can't she just get cancer? Like, I understand because of her research and work, if like this, her work gave her cancer, and like working with all of these like space things is what gave her cancer, I think that's fine. But it, like, if they in the movie are like, oh, the snap, you know, all the release of all that energy is what gave her cancer, I'm gonna be like, why does cancer need an origin story? Why can't cancer?
Yeah, you don't gotta make these too complicated, you know. And I think this show shows you don't have to make things too complex. There's a lot going on lore wise you know, they expanded the whole like afterlife of the MCU and filled in a lot of this like ancient history that seems kind of natural within the show, but if you do think about it, like, those are some large scale elements to add to the MCU, and that they have this like legitimate afterlife that seems to like validate a lot of different beliefs. And they have this line of like, oh, you know, this is one afterlife, everybody kind of has like their own afterlife. And I think they even directly mentioned Black Panther, and now I can't remember what they call that land now,
the astral plane.
Like the astral plane in Black Panther. So I think it'll be fun to see as they expand, like they bring in a Muslim character for the next show, or are they going to touch on the religion of that at all? And I think it'll be interesting to see how this impacts like the larger cast of the MCU going forward, and if we see any other like afterlives from some characters.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that I quick want to touch on is kind of including what you just said with our previous point, is speaking of Black Panther, like I see a lot of people coming up with, or trying to come up with all these fan theories of how they'll explain why T'Challa isn't in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. And part of me, I think the easiest solution is just go art imitates life, is T'Challa was dying and he didn't want anyone to know. He was just like dealing with this stuff privately. Maybe his close friends and family knew, but he didn't want Wakanda to worry about him. And so he kept it, you know, he kept his illness to himself. And then boom, there you go. Not that hard. People try to make stuff too complicated sometimes. Maybe they'll go with a comic book reason. Maybe they'll explain, oh, he's off doing this thing. But I think the easiest and most simplest way is just to do art imitating life. But
yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think a big reason that Moon Knight hits so hard is that people who have mental illness kind of see him as like a representation in comics, even for all the faults of like 80s comics and some of the more questionable storylines and things like that they try to do with his mental illness. I think in the end, people do feel like they're seeing themselves on the page or on the screen when they have someone like Moon Knight, obviously not just for the mental illness side, but like an Egyptian character who is so powerful and is like never kind of checked in any way for like any racist reasons, you know, they're just empowered. And I think that's really something that when you make them human origin stories helps, you know. It would not have been so relatable if it was like, oh, and then he went to the alien plane and the cosmic realm gave him multiple personalities, you know. And I think the same thing had happened for Chadwick Boseman. Unfortunately, a lot of people have family members who have gotten sick and died from cancer sometimes very quickly and very suddenly and shockingly. And I think seeing that in the MCU world and also in the real world can kind of like help people who are going through things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else you want to say about Moon Knight before we move on?
No, it was a pretty good one overall. I hope that this show did all right, so I wouldn't think that Marvel's going to get any wrong messaging from it, but I hope that the fact that it didn't trend so much and it wasn't like the social gathering of the world doesn't make Marvel think, oh, now we have to put cameos and stuff. You know, I think that this could be a really good building block going forward of them saying, yeah, we can just kind of take a character who doesn't really quite fit into our movie universe and just tell a story with them by themselves, you know. And you can get kind of further away from the core kind of classic Marvel characters and give us like a Squirrel Girl show, you know. You don't gotta have that make sense, just give us a season of Squirrel Girl or something like that. Or I think that's a really fun way to bring in characters, and you don't have to be like, but how does that fit into our like multi-decade storyline, you know. You just kind of throw it in there, and if it comes back up, it comes back up. But as of right now, we got like a beginning, middle, and end Moon Knight story, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like they could have a thing where, hey, we're going to do Moon Knight, and then he's going to appear like he can appear in a later show that we'll talk about in a few minutes that has some heavy religion themes. And then he's going to appear in our big Disney Plus crossover show. And that's kind of going to be it for Moon Knight. Maybe if the show is wildly successful and it just crushes Loki in the ratings, they feel like backing up a Brinks truck to Oscar Isaac's house and like say, hey, let's do season two. You know, if you want to do more behind the scenes stuff, we'll let you direct an episode, whatever you want to do. But yeah, so and back to your point on representation, before we move on to Obi-Wan Kenobi, nothing says Egyptian representation like a Honduran Cuban playing an Egyptian. So and that,
not even the first time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, not even the first
time. Not the first Marvel character either.
No. And then that brings us to Obi-Wan Kenobi. So we're getting the... Originally, we were supposed to have the first episode this next Wednesday, but they pushed it back, and I think they... All the plan was... Part of me thinks the plan was always to push it back, but they just wanted the news release of releasing 40 years to the day of A New Hope. And then they were like, just kidding, we're pushing it back. So we're getting the first two episodes this Friday, and then the next episode will be the following Wednesday. So within a week of each other, we will have the first three episodes. And so there have been a lot of leaks, basically a plot-by-plot breakdown for each episode leaked online. I have the willpower of a goldfish, so I have read all of those. I'm going to refrain from giving any predictions because I basically know most of what's going to happen. I will say this, if it's executed well, and I believe Deborah Chow can execute it well because I think... By and large, she's directed my favorite episodes of The Mandalorian. I think if I had to rank my favorite episodes in The Mandalorian, she has done two of probably my top three or four, if not my top two favorite. She directed two in season one, and she didn't direct anything in season two because she's preparing for Obi-Wan Kenobi. But I think, back to what I was trying to say, if this is executed well, I think this will replace Rogue One as the thing that most fans say is the best Star Wars since Empire Strikes Back. And I'm not even a big Rogue One fan. I just know the fandom at large considers Rogue One the best Star Wars since Empire Strikes Back. And I think this will replace it. But yeah, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's set 10 years after Revenge of the Sith. So that's 9 years before A New Hope. And it's going to be Obi-Wan versus Vader. We got some Inquisitors. There's been some controversy as far as the makeup, but I think, you know, and I think it's looked better. I think part of it was the angle that the Grand Inquisitor was shot at a downward angle, so it made his head look smaller and narrower than it actually was. And then if you look at some comic books that existed, that came out like 3 or 4 years ago, they drew him having more of a human-shaped head. And I understand people say, oh, well, the one of that species in Revenge of the Sith looked completely different. We already know what these look like in live action. But my counterpoint to that is if humans were a species in a sci-fi show that took place in another galaxy, and the first and only human they saw was Shaquille O'Neal, and then 10 years later, you showed them another human, and it was Jackie Chan, they would say, wow, they're really inconsistent with what their humans look like. And honestly, I think there should be more variances within species in sci-fi, so I don't mind it. Am I sitting here saying, it looks amazing? No, but I'm not sitting here trying to be like, it looks horrible. Fuck this show. This show's going to suck. I think it's going to be really good. I think all the performances so far in the trailers look great. I like the tone of the trailer. I think they're staying away more from the comedy. I think they're gonna, the show's gonna be a little more serious. But Tristan, I've talked enough about this. What are your thoughts? Any major predictions? What do you think the overall arcing plot's gonna be?
Yeah, Joe mentioned that he did not read any, or he read all of the leaks and he spoiled himself, but I've read none of them, so I'm coming in here pretty much blind. I am in the middle of rewatching the prequels to refresh my brain a bit on Obi-Wan's arc at the moment, but yeah, I haven't read any of the leaks, so I'm kind of just guessing on here. And I think, like you said, it feels a bit more dark, a bit more mature than the shows they've done before. But I hope that it is, honestly, because I think between Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett, neither show has been particularly like mature in the way that I thought it was going to be. Like, Mandalorian was advertised as like, oh, this dark kind of take on the underworld, and then it wasn't that at all. And Book of Boba Fett was like, oh, it's going to be the crime syndicates, you know, they're all going to be like battling, it's going to be kind of dark like The Godfather, and then it was not that. And I hope that this can actually deliver and be a bit more mature. Like, I don't need dark Star Wars, but I would like a variety of tones, you know, I think that's kind of the appeal of having a larger scale IP like this, is you can kind of change up the tone a bit. So I think this is going to definitely be a bit more of a serious show, and I do have some questions and predictions, kind of things that I think the show might capture or go on. Overall, I think the arc is going to be typical Star Wars arc of, oh, is there hope in the galaxy? I don't think so. Actually, there is. And I think that's a pretty good arc for Obi-Wan to have at this point in his story, where he's, you know, has this decade two decades of sitting in the desert, essentially waiting for Luke to come of age. And I can imagine he has a lot of regrets, a lot on his mind. You know, some regrets about where things went with Anakin. I can't wait to see how that relationship kind of develops here. And I am curious to see, like, how much does Obi-Wan know about Vader at this point in time? Like, when he starts season one, episode one, does he know that Vader is Anakin, or does he just know of, like, this dark force working for the Empire, and maybe it's Anakin, maybe it's not? I'd be curious to see his kind of realization. Does he have something like Ahsoka did in season two of Rebels, where he gets, like, this wow moment of saying, oh my god, it's Anakin? Or does he already know that? That'll be interesting to figure out. And are we going to see Hayden out of the suit in a flashback of some kind? Or is it just going to essentially be him in the Vader costume doing some dialogue? You know, are they going to make the most of Hayden? Or is it just kind of like, oh, well, we got to put him in because, you know, new actors can't recreate the old characters. We got to bring back the old actors because that's the only way to do it, according to Kathleen Kennedy now. But I'm also curious to see if he goes through, like, a physical transformation where he goes from, like, the redhead Obi-Wan that we know in the Clone Wars and prequels to being kind of like a gray-haired, older Obi-Wan by the end, more in line with Alec Guinness. You know, I think that's kind of a running joke in the Star Wars fandom of, like, Obi-Wan spent 20 years in Tatooine and he went from hot Ewan McGregor to, like, this old decaying man in, like, 20 years. And meanwhile, other actors haven't aged at all. So I think it'll be kind of a fun nod to fans here and there, especially if by the end he has, like, the whole white beard and everything, you know. And I think in the way that Rogue One, you mentioned Rogue One as sort of a universally liked Star Wars movie, and I think it also serves as a transition between the prequels and the original trilogy. If you don't want to watch any of the TV shows, any of that stuff, you're just like, okay, give me, like, a pad to leap to between these two trilogies. Rogue One is kind of that, and I think the show could be that as well. I think if we do get that arc from Obi-Wan of, God, I can't believe my apprentice fell. What am I doing with my life? I failed. And then kind of learning, like, oh, you know, there is still hope. And that hope maybe comes through Luke and Leia. And we kind of get, like, him set on his path that will eventually lead us to new hope. I don't know if it'll be, like, literally we see him in the last scene, like, walking up to rescue Luke in the opening scene of New Hope, or, like, his introduction scene of New Hope. And I don't know if it'll be, like, that direct, but I think we will get some kind of, like, he's walking off to the sunset, and we know that, you know, a year or so later, he's going to be picking up the sword again to go fight with Luke. I'm really curious how close they'll cut this tissue here. Is it going to be, like, right up to Revenge of the Sith, or is it going to be, like, right up to New Hope? They have, like, a 20-year gap to tell this story. How much of that time are they going to use? So I'm really curious about those kind of things and just exploring his arc a lot more.
Do you want the answer to that question or no?
No, don't tell me anything.
Okay. So
I want to go in blind.
I don't want to explain anything. I just want to ask two questions. Well, just I want to reiterate one thing. Part of the reason I think it's going to be more serious is if you look at the announced cast, none of them really have comedic backgrounds or are known for comedy except for Kumail Nanjiani. Pretty much everyone else is known for their serious work, whether it's Benny Safdie or O'Shea Jackson Jr. I mean, he dabbles in, he has, like, comedic scenes in movies, but he's not O'Shea Jackson Jr. is not really known for his, like, he's not, like, a comedic actor, I guess I should say. Kumail is the only one who's, like, that's a comedic actor, and so that's what lends me to believe it's going to be more serious. The other one, one of the questions I had is, so based on the trailer, knowing that he's going to fight Vader, it's kind of, you can assume that Obi-Wan is going to leave Tatooine. Any guesses as to the driving force that makes him decide to leave?
Yeah, I do. I think that's kind of going to be a debated thing among fans, because fans can be such purists when it comes to Star Wars, and they'll be like, well, why did he leave? He left Luke abandoned on Tatooine for this whole story. And I think the only real way to do it is that it's got to tie into Obi-Wan's arc. You know, it's got to tie into him having to rediscover hope or rediscover his place in the galaxy. And I think Leia could be that bridge. And I think it could also be a way of, like, tying the New Hope theme into being more than just about Luke, but being about, like, the Skywalkers as a whole. And that a New Hope is not just Luke. New Hope is Luke and Leia together, you know. And I think that's kind of, like, the turning point of the galaxy is not Luke going off on this adventure. It's, like, Luke and Leia reuniting on that Death Star, and that's the moment that Obi-Wan looks and sees him and kind of like smiles and says like my journey is done, and then dies. So I think we could see a moment where it's like he goes out of his way to save Leia, and then it kind of recontextualizes that moment in New Hope where he looks over and he sees them together again, and he thinks like, look, I did it, you know, I made the right choice, I saved Leia, I saved Luke, and now the two have become one, you know, the chosen one is Luke and Leia.
All right, and my final question about this before we move on to our next topic is, okay, so we know Obi-Wan appears, we know Uncle Owen appears, we know Aunt Beru appears, we know basically the various Inquisitors from Rebels appears, and we know, Luke and Vader appear. Any predictions for other previous characters to appear? Other characters from either, it could be from the movies, from the other shows, from comics, whatever.
I think there's a lot of potential. I mean, I would be interested to see if they somehow brought Satine in, even just for like a scene, a flashback, a vision. So if you haven't watched The Clone Wars, Satine was Obi-Wan's kind of love interest through a couple of arcs in The Clone Wars. Someone that he had a previous relationship with, and through a couple of moments during The Clone Wars reunited with, and she ultimately has kind of like a tragic end. So I think it would be really powerful for her to show up even in just a Force vision, because I think she embodies a lot of Obi-Wan's kind of regrets in his life as a Jedi.
I still believe in some version of some script somewhere, Corky Kreese was the son of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Satine Kreese. Is that still true today in Dave Filoni's mind, and will that be revealed in some future Star Wars project? Maybe, maybe not, but I still believe in some version of some script somewhere, Corky Kreese was the son of Satine and Obi-Wan.
I also think it's kind of a missed opportunity from a Disney branding perspective not to put Ahsoka in here somewhere and have a trio on screen together at one point or another. I like that Joe just goes and drinks his drink anytime he doesn't want to give something away.
I was thirsty. I drink when I want to drink. All right.
I'm reading into your
wouldn't,
body.
Honestly, I'm just drinking over here. Don't read into nothing that I do.
All right. But I do think, especially with an Ahsoka show coming out, it would be nice moment to get all three of them together, and especially to maybe give us a little bit of a look into Ahsoka's, what her arc might be or something in this upcoming show, because we know very little about like what that show is actually gonna entail. So I know the timelines don't line up at all, but it could be an interesting way of getting us a look into some kind of something that'll be further explored in Ahsoka's show. But those are definitely my biggest two. I would put someone like Darth Maul on there, but I know they've kind of talked about publicly in a lot of articles, not including him. They could be lying, of course. They know they lie all the time at Disney, so who knows. Liam Neeson, maybe like a voice cameo or something would be cool, but he's also talked about not coming back, so I don't know about that either, but I don't really trust.
I'll say this,
look, he's speaking again.
This is before I read any leaks, so this is my reaction when I knew nothing. When he said I wouldn't come back to play Liam Neeson unless it was in a movie, I was like, you came back to voice Qui-Gon in an animated episode of The Clone Wars, so what are you talking about, buddy?
Yeah, he came back to voice Qui-Gon in Rise of Skywalker, so I feel like almost like voice over cameos are more likely for some of these people, because they don't have to do a lot of work. You know, they don't got to show up and get in the costume and all that. They just got to say a couple lines for the Force vision. Give me a Force vision. That's really all I want. At least one scene where Obi-Wan goes in like a cave and has like an existential crisis in the form of visions. You know, that's what I like about my Star Wars. Give me some angst.
Anything else
I'm
you
also
want to say?
Curious
go ahead.
Last thing I want to mention is that I'm curious about the action too, because like, is the action going to be like large-scale prequel kind of battles? I know they've said a couple of times they want the lightsaber fight between Maul and Obi-Wan to be like the prequels, and I don't know, like, what does that mean to them, you know? Does that
Maul and Obi-Wan or Vader and Obi-Wan?
Not Maul and Obi-Wan, I meant Vader and Obi-Wan. I know they talked about, I think Kathleen Kennedy or someone said in an interview that they were trying to be kind of inspired by the prequels in that fight.
Yeah.
So
Hayden Christensen said in an interview that the fights are much closer to the prequel fights than the original trilogy fights, or specifically the A New Hope fight.
Yeah, and that's what interests me, because I love the big scale fights of the prequels, especially the lightsaber battles. They're like so operatic and huge, but when you get to the New Hope, like, they're not that at all. Like, they're very slow and meticulous, and I wonder if this will serve as a transition where, like, you're seeing some of the big operatic fights, but you're also seeing that, like, the world is different now. Obi-Wan's fighting differently now. You know, it's not necessarily the big Clone Wars style action that he's used to in his day.
All right. Anything else you want to say about Kenobi before we move on?
Can't wait for it. I mean, I love Obi-Wan. I love the Star Wars prequels. They're some of my most, like, nostalgically joyful movies. I've seen them, like, 100 times. So I've been kind of harsh on some of the Star Wars shows on here, but I have a feeling I'm going to be a lot more positive on this one. And you said, oh, this is going to, like, be something that people love and kind of unites the fandom a bit. And I'm curious to see how that can be possible. And one of the most disjointed and unpleasant occasionally fandoms on the internet, I think it'll be nice to get something that everybody kind of likes for once.
All right, I have three final messages. The first one is there are four legacy characters that haven't been announced that return that I've seen. But who's to say what version of legacy, what am I considering legacy? Legacy could be like a big time character or a character that was in one episode of the Clone Wars. So, or
Rebels. Yeah, they can go all over the place. Future, past.
So don't freak out about what I'm defining as legacy. Two from the leaks, I guess I have 2 points, not three. There's one thing that I think could be very controversial with fans, and something that I think will be very controversial with casual Star Wars fans, but something that diehard Star Wars fans have learned to accept by now. So we will talk about that, because one of those things that I think will be controversial with all fans doesn't happen until the final episode, so.
Oh, God. Of course. Like, it's all the way to the finale and pull something crazy.
Yeah.
That's the Marvel, the Disney way.
All right. So with that, we're going to jump back over to the MCU. First things first, we got a She-Hulk trailer that dropped this week. It's called She-Hulk Attorney at Law. Sorry, I've been drinking a little bit.
They changed it. It's actually She-Hulk now.
Yeah.
They She-Hulk. Crossed it over with Hawkeye.
Yeah, She-Hulk. Yeah. Attorney at Law. No. So basically, it stars Tatiana Maslany, who people may know from Orphan Black. She plays Jessica Walters, which in the comics is Bruce Banner's cousin. They didn't say in the trailer how she gets Hulk powers, but in the comics it was a blood transfusion. I imagine because it doesn't look like this is really going to be an origin story for her, as far as like, oh, she starts off everyday normal life and then at the end of episode one she gets her powers. I think it's going to start episode one, she kind of has her powers, so I think they're probably going to go the same route, just because it's a quick and easy explanation. Is maybe, I'm trying to remember, Hulk didn't disappear in the snap. No, because Hulk was the one that brought him back, so he definitely didn't disappear in the snap. I was going to say maybe they got the blood transfusion right before the snap, and then he disappeared, and during the snap she had to learn how to use her powers. But
the timeline of Hulk does get a bit confusing here, because in Shang-Chi he was back to normal Bruce Banner, but when we saw him in... Yeah. This trailer, he's Hulk Banner. You know, he's like the Hulk Bruce Banner hybrid again. So I wonder if they're hinting at some kind of timeline shift here. You know, things are kind of out of order at the MCU right now. So
this could be a whole COVID thing. Of this was supposed to be released before Shang-Chi, or who knows? Maybe we'll watch episode one and it'll all be explained and we'll be good to go. But yeah, I assume they'll probably go the blood transfusion route or something like that. Honestly, the CG She-Hulk looks so bad. It looked like the Ang Lee Hulk so much. It looked worse than the Ang Lee Hulk that it took me out of it. And I was saw a visual effects artist explain why Bruce Banner and Hulk looks so well and hers doesn't. Is because they covered Bruce Banner and Hulk with body hair, and that kind of makes it look less cartoony. And that's kind of harder to do with Jessica Walters, and that's why it looks so cartoony and not real, is because you can't kind of cover it with body hair to make it look real. And if this is like the rough CG and they're going to tune it up and touch it up for the show, I think it'll be fine. But if this is the CG they're rocking with and that's its final form, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through an episode because it looks that bad. The plot looks fine. you know, everything else looked fine. Bruce Banner Hulk looked just like from the movies, but Jessica Walter Hulk looks so, or Jennifer Walter, just, I don't remember.
I think it's, yeah, oh, now I don't remember.
Now I feel bad for not knowing. It's She-Hulk, and it is Jennifer. Looks bad. And it looks bad. But Tristan, kind of what are your thoughts on the trailer? Could you look past the terrible CG?
Yes, Jennifer Walters is the character's name. I knew that, but I could look past the CG a little bit. I'm not as, like, I don't care too much about bad CG sometimes in movies as much as other people do, but it definitely can be very distracting, especially when it's on, like, a humanoid main character. You know, it's one thing when, like you mentioned in the Moon Knight review, when it's, like, some ethereal monster that I can't have any mental processing of actually existing, but when it's on a person, it definitely looks pretty off. But I love Tatiana Maslany. I think she's great in Orphan Black, and she plays a ton of characters in that, so you know she has the range to pull off what they're asking for here. And I also think She-Hulk's really interesting, very absurd character. I've only read a handful of stuff she's been in. I'm trying to, before the show comes out, read at least a good amount of, like, her big appearances and some of the fun storylines she's been in. But so far, a very big cosmic kind of strange character, so I think if the CG on her looks weird, it makes me curious, like, how weird is it going to look when they get to the even stranger characters and creatures that are inevitably going to pop up in a She-Hulk show. I think if they go and lean into that, it could be really fun, where they give us some really kind of crazy big takes on the Marvel universe. You know, we're finally getting into a cosmic side of Marvel where they're just letting people kind of, like, go off and do whatever, and I think this could be one of their weirder shows for sure. I think it's going to be tonally strange. I could see this being really divisive among people because the tone is going to be different than anything else you've seen. It's going to be a bit more adult skewed. I think it's interesting we're getting Ms. Marvel and this show, I think, back to back from Marvel, because they're both comedically leaning, but I think Ms. Marvel is much more going for, like, the YA teen audience, where this is going a bit more for the older audience. So it'll be interesting to see how these two shows perform against each other and what people end up liking more, because Marvel has occasionally dipped to the comedy realm, but they've always tried to be, like, action comedy, you know, and these two shows are both going to be comedies.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I don't have much else to say. My honestly, if this wasn't, like, part of the MCU, my attraction to this show, I guess, or my hype for this show would be pretty low. Like, I watched the trailer and nothing about it made me be like, I need to be watching this show. This show is going to be entertaining for me. It just feels like I'm only watching it as a complete MCU completionist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what excites me about this is the potential of it, not necessarily what we've seen in the trailer, but, like, where they could go with her taking on these cases. You know, obviously there's a lot of characters already established that could come in, like Daredevil, I think, would be a easy shoo-in here, especially with news around him recently.
Yep.
I think it'd be a good fit to have him show up here. Even some of the other Defenders, like, you could see, like, Jessica Jones showing up for an episode, or Luke Cage, or anyone they want to bring back from that kind of universe, I could see popping up in this show. So I'm really curious, because the ceiling is very high on this, but I think the floor is also very low, especially if the effects are not any better when they come out than they are on this trailer. I'm sure they'll be a little bit better. You know, they're going to touch up a little bit. Knowing Marvel, they always do the effects up until, like, the night the show comes out, and you can tell sometimes, but as long as it is good enough for me to look past, I'll be all right. But that barrier of entry is going to be something that holds a lot of people back.
Yeah, all right. And I think that moves us on to our next topic, which is, you kind of touched on it a little bit here, and it sounds like Disney Plus and Marvel are moving forward with Daredevil Season 3. I'm very curious to see how this goes. A lot of people who are big fans of Daredevil had problems with how Wilson Fisk was depicted. And part of my headcanon, kind of when they introduced the multiverse, was that the Netflix shows took place in a different universe, mainly because they felt impacted by the MCU, but the MCU never really felt impacted by them. But if they have Daredevil Season 3 and they have Moon Knight crossover, and maybe they have Hawkeye played by Hailee Steinfeld crossover, or maybe even Tom Holland shows up in an episode, I'm very curious to see what they do. with this show as far as the quality of it, the darkness of it, because the show on Netflix, if it was a movie, would have been rated R. And I know they have the new kind of parental controls, but I can't see Disney releasing or like an official MCU show on Disney Plus that was that graphic. I think Moon Knight handled it really well by basically the character blacks out when the super violent stuff happens, so you just kind of skip over it. But what are your thoughts on Daredevil season 3 potentially coming to Disney Plus?
Yeah, I'm really curious about it because that original show was really, really acclaimed and one of the top Netflix shows in terms of like fan engagement and people really liking it a lot. And when Marvel announced that they're doing all these Disney Plus shows in the first place, the comparisons to Netflix immediately started and people were saying, oh, they're never going to be as good, they're never going to be as mature as Netflix, the Netflix shows were. And Daredevil individually is kind of like the highlight, I think, of that. I wasn't particularly in love with the Netflix show Daredevil. I liked some of the episodes here and there. I thought it was definitely enjoyable, but I wasn't the person who was like clamoring for more. So I'm curious what this next era of Daredevil is going to look like, because they brought the cast back, but they're not bringing back any of the writers or seemingly any of the directors, so it's going to be a whole new creative direction. So, like, it's not really going to... I don't imagine it feels similar to the Netflix show, but I have no idea. They haven't really said much. And the people that they did tap to write this Daredevil show are not, like, they're typical of the Marvel Writers Collection, where it's, like, the most random, like, people they could find that have worked. The biggest show they've worked on is Covert Affairs. Like, that is not like a shining endorsement of like all these guys are like some great writers and some with history of some great work behind them. So that kind of makes me a bit nervous. Like, Stephen DeKnight, I believe, is the guy behind the original Daredevil and for the show, and he really had like his heart and soul in that, and he was involved in the process. And that's not really how Marvel does it. You know, like, these aren't all tour takes on shows, you know, they're not going to hand it off to a single director and be like, give it everything you got. You know, it's kind of a, more of a corporate creation. So I could see it being a lot softer, a lot lighter, but still more mature than the average Marvel show. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, Moon Knight has action, it has blood at parts, and it's a lot more mature than something like even Hawkeye was, where Hawkeye was a much more of the fun side of Marvel. So if they really do lean into this and go for that R-rated feel, this could be a big hit for them. And I think that would be the direction I would go. Like, sure, you're going to turn off like a handful of parents or whatever, but that's what the parental controls are for. And if you want this shared universe thing to keep thriving and not pop as they're getting dangerous or close to popping, I think having a variety of tones and a variety of characters to go to is what you got to do. And this show has to feel different than everything else, or it's just going to... This is one that could easily blow up in their face, I think, because the expectations are pretty high coming off of the Netflix shows, that this has to deliver at least on some level of the tone of what the Netflix show was.
Yeah, I'd feel much more confident about Daredevil if this was going to be a Hulu original as far as a Disney Plus. If they were like, hey, we're putting Daredevil season, you know, we're going to have Daredevil season 1 and 2. But that's my thing. I'm curious because Daredevil season 1 and 2 are currently on Disney Plus, but it's also like they're not like marketing. It's not like they put all this investment. I think the rights just reverted back to them, so they got it for free and they're like, we might as well. But if they were like, hey, Daredevil season 1 and 2 are on Netflix, or not on Netflix, sorry, are simultaneously on Hulu and Disney Plus, and then they put it on Hulu, like released it week to week on Hulu, and then like a year later just dumped it on Disney Plus as well, I feel like that would make sense. But just being a, and maybe that's what they ultimately end up doing, who knows, maybe they're like, hey, this is what we're gonna do because we want it to be darker, we want it to maintain that same tone as the original. But if it's just a direct to Disney Plus show, I don't have faith that it's gonna maintain that tone and it's just gonna be light. And I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want it to be kind of in the same tone, just because outside of Loki and Falcon and Winter Soldier and to a certain extent What If and Moon Knight, the Disney Plus shows have just been kind of like eh. Like WandaVision I didn't care about, and some of these shows I just like, no offense to the people that made Miss Marvel, but and maybe it's just because Captain Marvel was so bland, but I'm not excited at all for Miss Marvel. Like I'll watch it, I guess, but I'm not, like, sitting here being like, oh, I can't wait for Miss Marvel to come out like I am with Obi-Wan Kenobi, or if they were like, hey, Loki season 2 is coming out on X date, I'd be like, oh, can't wait for that show to come out, because I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I think Marvel is definitely at a point here, because I share your general sentiment that a lot of these Marvel shows have been a bit of a letdown, even though I think I like the majority of them. I liked WandaVision, like Loki, I liked Falcon the Winter Soldier, but I think they get stuck too much in the formula and too much in feeling and looking kind of the same, and they have a little bit of outskirts here and there that change things slightly, but I hope that this Daredevil show can be their gateway of really getting out there and changing it up. And like the Halloween special could be a good way to change things up. I thought Moon Knight honestly did a good job of not feeling tonally the same as the rest of the Marvel shows do. So I hope that's what they're doing, because if it all starts to feel the same it just feels like filler content, I think that's a big risk for Marvel going forward, especially like the reception generally to Doctor Strange 2 has been pretty mixed. And I think a lot of that revolves around like how pre-invested were you in some of the storylines that they dealt with in Doctor Strange. Like if you watched WandaVision or didn't watch WandaVision, I think you had an entirely different experience watching that movie, you know. And I think that's not something that the average moviegoer wants to feel like. They don't want to walk in and be like, well, I don't know what's happening because I didn't watch three different shows that came up before this.
It comes back to an argument I had like 4 or 5 years ago when people were like, what's a better trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy or the Captain America trilogy? And I'm like, the Captain, there's no Captain America trilogy, because for it to be a true trilogy, you should be able to watch Captain America the First Avenger, Captain America the Winter Soldier, and Captain America Civil War with nothing else and be able to understand everything that's going on. You can watch Captain America First Avenger without watching any other MCU stuff and you'll be fine. You can kind of, I think you'll probably be fine with Winter Soldier, maybe a little lost at moments, but you must be fine. If you just jump from Winter Soldier right to Captain America Civil War, you will be 100% completely lost. You will have no idea what's going on. You will be like, who are these characters I'm supposed to know that I do not know? And that's the same thing. I feel like, to me, I understand all of this is connected and you can connect it, but it should be written and done in a way that I can watch Doctor Strange and have watched nothing else but Doctor Strange and be able to understand and comprehend this movie. If you didn't watch WandaVision, I think you'll just be lost when the show comes out, and I shouldn't need to watch a show that Doctor Strange basically cameoed in a post-credit scene in to understand Doctor Strange 2 Multiverse of Madness. I know Wanda was on the poster. I know she was heavily marketed as being in this. It's not like it was a shock she was in this. But I shouldn't need to watch a show basically unrelated to Doctor Strange to understand Doctor Strange 2.
It'd be one thing if it was like Wanda the movie or something. But
oh yeah.
Yeah, I think when you talk about Daredevil, I think their best direction is to avoid being so connected. Even like I talked about Moon Knight, I thought something that worked about it was that it was so disconnected. And I think the scary part of the Daredevil show is that Marvel is going to be like, okay, now's our chance to build out a whole Defenders team. We got to bring in everybody else. We got to bring in this guy and this guy and this guy. And then get like lost in the shuffle of why would I watch this show again? You know, and I think their best option is like, okay, let's just tell like a singular Daredevil story. Let's not really worry about like, oh, is this the Defenderverse? Is this the MCU? Just like, tell an individual Daredevil story that's good. If people respond to it positively, then you can do whatever you want with it after that. But if you come out of the gate with a mess, people aren't going to latch onto it, you know. And the best comparison is Hawkeye, when they brought back Kingpin again, and he was kind of weirdly not the character from the other show, and he kind of was, and it was kind of confusing of, is this a variant, is this the real character, because he's not really behaving like the character that we know. And then by the end, Hawkeye felt a little bit like a jumbled kind of setup for other things, and you were like, well, I don't really know where we're going from there. But yeah, Daredevil, I think, could work if they are able to keep it as its own thing, its own tone, its own style that doesn't feel like something that's just hanging out side by side with Hawkeye, you know?
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about kind of the Daredevil and MCU, or do you want to move on to our final topic? Well, I have one thing to say before we get to our final topic, but anything about Daredevil?
No, I'm ready to move on. I'm excited to see what they do with it, but I am definitely nervous.
All right. One quick thing I want to touch on as far as the Disney Plus overall. There was the movie Sneakerella that was a Disney Plus original movie. Didn't watch it, but here's my review. Wasn't for me. Didn't care for it.
You didn't even watch it.
Didn't watch it. Don't need to. Here's my review. Wasn't for me. It's hard to review something that's not for me. The movie that is for me that hasn't come out yet, but it's going to be on Paramount Plus in like a year probably, is Top Gun Maverick. That's the movie I'm excited for.
That's a perfect Joe movie right there.
But also, some things that did drop on Disney Plus, Eight Simple Rules, great show. If you're a John Ritter fan, he's, you know, obviously in like the first season or two, and then his untimely death. I think one of the all-time great TV episodes is the episode post John Ritter's death, where, back to my previous thing, life imitating art. How do you kill off your TV dad? You just say, hey, what happened in real life is what happened on the show. He was at the grocery store getting milk and he collapsed, and that was that. And I thought bringing in James Garner and David Spade as the grandpa and the uncle was perfect. Changed the tone of the show a little bit, but kept the heart of the show, I think, and still continued being just as good as it was with Katie Sahagal and my first foray with Kaylee. Well, no, Alley Cat Strike was my first foray with Kaylee Cuoco, but this is my second foray with Kaylee Cuoco. We also have Alias, which I know Tristan was a fan of, drop on Disney Plus. And the show.
Yeah, I liked Alias a lot back in the day. It's like a spy thriller with a kind of like sci-fi edge to it that gets more and more sci-fi as it kind of goes along in the seasons. And it was the kind of proving ground of J.J. Abrams. So I know Star Wars fans have a love-hate relationship sometimes with J.J. Abrams. But if you're into like the mystery box style of J.J. or Damon Lindelof, obviously went on to do Lost and Watchmen and all that kind of stuff, cut his teeth a bit as a writer here. So if you go and if you're into that era of TV, this is like a really great kind of starting point of that era where you're seeing a lot of writers pop up or directors pop up that go on to later be like very prominent names in the like prestige TV, mystery box TV kind of era. So I had a great nostalgia trip watching a couple episodes of this, and I definitely recommend it if you're into that kind of body double mystery type of thing. It's sort of like a spy thriller with so if you're into Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, it had a spy thriller element to it too. But yeah, this is definitely much more in the sci-fi vein. So if you like that kind of stuff, like Lost, I think you'll be into this.
All right, and one show that got added was a season that was one season canceled too soon, and that is The Finder. And I would recommend The Finder. Here's kind of the Wikipedia breakdown. It's kind of your serialized episode kind of story. It's not like this big one season amazing arc or anything, but Walter Sherman, played by Jeff Stoltz, earned a reputation as someone who was very good at tracking people down while serving in the Army Military Police. After getting caught in an IED explosion, the resulting brain damage enhanced that skill, and he became a finder. Walter teams up with his legal advisor, Leo, played by Michael Clark Duncan, RIP, to find people and things law enforcement either cannot or will not find. Occasionally helping out is Walter's girlfriend, a deputy U.S. Marshal. The two men also watch over Willa, a teen who was raised by gypsies to be a criminal and whose crafty skill set comes in handy on their jobs from time to time. It's just this fun show that was on Fox back in the day around 2012. If you're like desperate for a show to watch, you're like, I've watched everything on all these streaming services, just recommend something for me to watch. Just check out season one, episode one of The Finder. If you watch it and it's not for you, it's not for you, but maybe you'll find something to take your time up for a weekend or two. So check out The Finder.
I'm glad we found that show, Joe.
And then haven't thought about that show in about 10 years since it got canceled. But when I saw that it was on Disney Plus earlier this week, it brought back like a little mini wave of nostalgia. I'm like, oh, I remember that show. I like that show. But that, speaking of waves of nostalgia,
a lot of waves.
A movie dropped this weekend that I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, excluding the Pixar movies that were meant for theaters, but then because of the pandemic and everything, got moved to Disney Plus. It's the best Disney Plus original movie. Very low bar, very, very, very low bar, but I think it leaps and jumps and just, with ease and grace, skips on right over that bar, and that is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, directed by Akiva Schaffer. You got Chip, voiced by John Mulaney, Dale, voiced by, blanking on his name. He stars in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He was in SNL. I was hoping by...
You got Andy Samberg.
Andy Samberg, that's who I was thinking of. You got Tim Robinson, plays a character that I don't want to say right now because I want to ease into the spoiler aspect. Eric Bana voicing Monterey Jack, and just a slew of famous people, just cameo after cameo after cameo, a lot of famous cartoon characters from all histories, not just Disney. I would say, honestly, the Disney characters basically make up the main cast, and then all the characters in the background are pretty much non-Disney animated characters, or at least non-Disney animated styles that you recognize and recognize. Like a character style that was from Big Mouth on Netflix. Minor spoiler alert, but Stan Marsh from South Park was in the background of a shot. Found a, basically, to kind of explain, I feel like it is in the world of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where toons exist alongside people, and that the animated movies and shows that we, and video games, that we watch are really performed by these animated actors. And the best way I describe it is it's 21 Jump Street meets Who Framed Roger Rabbit, with Chip and Dale as these kind of actors who have to become detectives, have to become the characters that they played on TV, solving this mystery of what happened to their friend Monterey Jack. And I thought it was really well done. I think this is definitely 100% a family movie. Little kids can enjoy it, and there's a lot of themes and adults, basically allegories for drugs and human trafficking that Disney and this movie pulls off really well, that kids don't fully know what they're going for, but parents can watch and easily know what they're actually talking about. And yeah, I actually quite enjoyed this. And what are your thoughts, Tristan? I've talked quite a bit about it.
Yeah, if you follow this channel for a little while, you know that me and Joe did a live watch of Space Jam A New Legacy back when it dropped in the height of health related drops, you know, or things weren't coming out in the theater, so they were just dropping on HBO, and that felt like it was a fever nightmare where it was just Warner Brothers taking all the things I own and being like, here, take them, and throwing them at the screen. And I was like, you get to that final scene in Space Jam where there's just a bunch of people in like Party City costumes CG together in the background of this one scene, and you think, they tricked me into watching this movie. I don't know what I'm doing here, why I'm watching this. And this movie is like the complete opposite of that. It does take all of the IPs, you know, and just sprays them all over the screen. You know, even beyond Disney, it takes some Netflix characters. It takes some Paramount characters. A really particularly prominent Paramount character is like a reoccurring supporting character here in this movie. You got some Warner Brothers characters, of course, some classic like DC related jokes. Even Nickelodeon gets a couple of shout outs, and I wonder if Nickelodeon said no to a certain scene that they ended up just not showing and explaining through dialogue. But we'll get to that more in the spoiler section, I think. But I had a blast with this, honestly, and it's not going to be like a
famous 4.5 or something. I mean, I think a certain, we'll talk about that in the spoiler section, but I think a certain cola brand that was at one point associated with cocaine said no to this as well, because one of the main henchmen in this movie is very clearly supposed to be a Coca-Cola bear.
Yeah, and there's literally a line where they say, you owe me a non-specific cola drink, yeah, like that.
But I think other than those two things, I know what you're talking about. They go all in. They're like, the characters are the characters. There's no like, oh, that's supposed to be this character. No, like it very clearly is this character from like all these other brands, Warner Brothers, Paramount. And I have theories on maybe why, how they got so many brands, but I want to hear more of your thoughts on the movie.
Yeah, I think what hurt something like Space Jam 2 was that it felt like just this big, long, half-assed advertisement for Warner Brothers. Like, oh, come see what we got on our streaming platform. And this feels like it has some heart to it. You know, the people behind Lonely Island are the writers and the directors here. And I've kind of mocked Disney over the last few years of like taking these random, even in this episode, taking like these random, like inexperienced people and saying, oh, lead our huge franchise, you know, and then it ends up inevitably being like a huge mess because they don't have the experience that you would need to write something that big. And you give that to people who are actually experienced comedy writers, and this is what you get, like an actual good comedy with a lot of creative jokes. And it's not just shoving stuff you know in your face, it's using stuff you know as like a punchline to some other joke within the movie. And it feels like your foreknowledge of these characters only goes on to like expand some of the punchlines of the jokes, because I've never seen a Rescue Rangers episode, so I know nothing about like this version of Chip and Dale. My only history of Chip and Dale is them being the mechanics in Kingdom Hearts fixing my spaceship, you know, so I know them from that, and that's it. And yeah, I was still able to get out of this movie.
Yeah, I grew up like watching Goof Troop, Tailspin, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, but like it's been so long, I couldn't tell you a single plot of any of the episodes of any of those shows. And if you think, oh, I didn't watch Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, like I'm not going to get anything out of it. Basically, they use the idea of Chip and Dale as basically these molds for them to put characters on top of, because they aren't playing like the Chip and Dale from the show. It's essentially like about the actors who played those characters. And I think it's such like tropes and stuff that you know that you don't need to know those characters. If you can fully enjoy this movie, if you haven't watched that show, and it'll probably just more add to it. If you grew up on that show and remember that show better than I did, it'll just make it better. But I think they tell you everything you need to know if you didn't watch the show, because I don't think they fully expect like, oh, we're gonna make this well-made, relatively high-budget movie just to do all this animation on the hopes and dreams that enough people remember this random ass show from the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun meta jokes with it, where like Dale was at, you know, he was a star of Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, and then the show gets canceled, so now years later he's working as kind of like this washed up celebrity. He goes around to like conventions and signs pictures, you know, and that's what some of my favorite scenes of this movie are him like hanging out in the artist alley at Hollywood Convention Center, just like talking to the characters who are next to him. And that's kind of the fun of like this real world too, where it's like not just all happy roses and sunshine. It's like, oh, he kind of is like this washed up loser now who just goes around to the different conventions and gets people to sign pictures for him. Like, I think that is kind of fun too. You mentioned like there's drug addict storylines, and there's an element to like the darker side of Hollywood here that they're able to capture that I think added a lot to this and made it feel like not just a big walking advertisement for things.
Yeah, so I just want to say one final thing before we kind of move into the spoiler territory, because I do want people to watch this movie. I do think this is a perfect family movie that I feel like Hollywood doesn't really make anymore, unless it's like, I mean, I understand this is kind of a big franchise IP. I mean, it's not, but it's still like connected to Disney, but it's still, it's not like this big $200 million movie, which is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Is that if you were a fan, if you like grew up or a big fan of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, this is 100% a spiritual sequel to this. I mean, it basically takes place in the same universe. So yeah, that's the one thing, you know, if you want more of that type of movie, definitely check this out on Disney Plus. Tristan, what, any final thoughts before we move on to the spoiler?
Yeah, I definitely recommend this movie as well. I think the Roger Rabbit comparison is worthy, and the way that this is sort of like a, not just because it's obviously drawing from the same premise, but it also is like the way Roger Rabbit had, you know, like the spy mystery storyline, and also kind of like the cartoon stuff was going on in the background. This has like the mystery storyline at the forefront, and the cartoon stuff is just kind of like enhancing to the world. So I think you don't have to worry at all about like familiarity with Disney brands. I think it does, it has a core story that you can just connect to basically. And I also think if you're going to watch this, don't watch the trailers if you haven't seen them yet, because I think it's, the trailers do give away a good amount of the fun cameos that come in the movie. That would have been a lot more fun to watch if I hadn't seen the trailer beforehand. So I highly recommend watching the movie. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and for me that's a pretty positive score for one of these ones. So check it out. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I don't even know what my rating would be. I'd probably be about a 3.5 out of 5, 7 out of 10. That's pretty much where I'd be. And I think with that, we're going to move more on to the spoiler section, because a lot of this movie, a lot of the discussion on this movie is going to be talking about the cameos and all that, and I don't want to ruin it for people that are interested in this movie. So if you haven't seen this movie, come back, check out the rest of this review. And if you have seen it, hey, let's talk spoilers. With that, we're going to be talking spoilers in 3, 2, 1. Ugly Sonic. The fact that they included that, A. B, made it work. And I want your thoughts on Ugly Sonic, because that was definitely, as far as like the cameos and especially the non-Disney IP, I mean, I think that's going to be everyone's number one takeaway with this movie, is like the standout character.
Yeah, I mentioned that there's a pretty prominent Paramount character, and that is Ugly Sonic. So if you haven't seen this movie, they bring Sonic in here, but it is not the Sonic you know from the movie. It's the Sonic you know from the trailer to the movie that got trashed by fans online. And
it looked horrible.
Paramount, of course, was caught off guard by this, I think, and had to all of a sudden react very quickly and change the animation to the last second. And released the movie with a totally different Sonic look, and it's kind of like an infamous story of the internet outcry actually impacting the product by the time it came out. Yeah. And they bring Tim Robinson in from Netflix fame to voice Ugly Sonic, obviously comedian fame, but currently big on his Netflix show, so there's some crossover there too. And yeah, Ugly Sonic was so much fun. And the fact that he's not just a cameo either, like I thought it was hilarious when he shows up in that scene I mentioned where Dale is working his signing pictures, but he also comes back towards the end and has like a full complete arc somehow and like saves the day. And I honestly wish I watched this in theaters, obviously it wasn't out in theaters. It would have been a fun one to see in theaters though, because when Ugly Sonic shows up at the end in that helicopter, like I can't imagine the crowd not cheering for that.
Yeah, that was Ugly Sonic just having a full on arc was great. So many great cameos. Batman versus E.T. And I believe Batman was voiced by Kevin Conroy, if I'm not...
Yeah, he was in his Batman v Superman battle outfit, and he has that goofy line of E.T.'s like, E.T. forgive Batman. Batman just like, okay.
So I want to run an idea by you that I want your thoughts on, like, how they got all of these characters. And for me, I think it's free market research. Warner Brothers doesn't need to know where the public stands with Batman. They know. But with a lot of these characters that were like these smaller characters that people aren't like on the forefront, I think it's free market research. You slap all of these characters in the background and you just see what Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and all these people react to. If there's like a character that's like this minor character on a show and it's like, oh, this is one of the ones people are talking about online a lot. Like it's Paramount or Warner Brothers or whatever studio knows like, hey, maybe we could be doing more with this character. I think that's probably what it was. There's no way they paid for like each individual character. I think maybe they gave them a little bit of money, the studio a little bit of money of like, hey, if there's characters you don't want us to use, and I'm sure maybe for certain characters there's parameters like you can't use them for this or that. But I think for the most part, my theory is it's just free market research for them. But I wanted your thoughts on maybe how they got all of these characters, and it seemed like free range to essentially use whoever they used like. With the whole plot of bootlegging characters, that you got bootleg Homer and Bart Simpson, which, I mean, I guess those are Disney characters now, so they didn't need to get permission for those, but.
Yeah, it's interesting when you watch with that meta context of, like, whose characters are whose and which characters they're willing to go the furthest with, and you can tell, I think, that when it's not their character, they're a little tiny bit more respectful to it, you know? Like, the fact that Ugly Sonic actually gets an arc, I think, is something that happened probably because it wasn't their character and they either wanted to or had to give him a bit more than just the butt of a joke type of thing. I would love to see like some interviews going into like how they got all of this stuff, because I imagine some of it was just, okay, we're gonna pay Netflix so that we can put this character from Big Mouth in the background of a random scene, you know, there's kind of things like that. And I also think it's free marketing. Like, you know, what does Warner Brothers have to lose by letting them have a couple of Looney Tunes show up in this? All it's going to get is someone to be like, you know what, I haven't watched Looney Tunes in a while, and they go to HBO Max and start watching it, you know? And I think in this era where everything is available to everybody at, like, any time at all, you could see more of this kind of stuff where studios are willing to market whatever random back catalog thing they can think of because someone can just go and watch it on HBO right now. And I thought it was a lot of fun. Like, I think the fact that they were able to reach beyond the borders of the studios and get other stuff outside of just Disney added a lot to the experience of this, where we had no idea who was coming scene to scene. You know, was it going to be a Disney character? Was it going to be a Fox character? Was it going to be a Paramount character, a Warner Brothers character? You just didn't know.
Yeah. And I think, like, this is a movie, like, that you almost want to watch twice. You watch it the first time for the plot, and the second time you're not even, I mean, not that the plot's bad or anything, but you're like ignoring the plot and just staring at the background the entire time to spot characters you missed, jokes you missed. Like, Dobby was a model for Gucci in this universe. Like, and that's the thing, that he was like blurry in the background that I caught him the first time, but you could,
yeah, I didn't notice him the first time.
You could very easily miss him. Butthead is running for Senate. Just so many jokes in the background there. If you're not, like, Chun-Li is on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Is this Squidward on the Walk of Fame too? Yeah. I noticed that one. Nickelodeon was a bit lighter on what they let them use, I think. And there's a lot of references, and like you see Jimmy Neutron's hair during like that scene of the where there's a bunch of different pieces of things, you know. You see a couple of things in the background, but I mentioned in the non-spoiler section that there's this arc where the main detective character tells her essentially origin story, where she ordered a raid on the Nick Jr. studios, and it was botched, and I think it was the Rugrats or some characters of Nickelodeon fame had attacked the cops, and I think the writers maybe wanted to show that flashback, and Nickelodeon was like, yeah, maybe don't have the Rugrats kill a bunch of people, you know? Yeah. Maybe that's a little bit.
And so many meta jokes. So I've had, because I watched it last night, and I have it going on, and like every moment, every line seems so like crafted and so like focused on the universe. And right now, they're doing the thing where Dale and Chip are beating each other on the head. And the bird, like, gets the alarm of, like, he has to come into work because they're doing the thing where they're flying around the head. And it's such, like, a joke that I feel like doesn't appear in your script until, like, draft 5, because you finally, like, think of that bit of, oh, like, the bird, he's, like, getting called into work, but he has to fly over somebody's head. And it's such, it's great. It's so, like, well-crafted. Even if you're not into the story, I think you'd watch it just for the appreciation for the writing of it.
Yeah, I think the fact that the story is kind of basic at its core helps a lot, because you're just like, okay, their friend's gone missing, a handful of other teens have gone missing, let's like uncover the mystery. And that lets you just kind of bring the characters to different places and have interact with different characters and suspects. Like the old Peter Pan is now kind of like this washed up B-movie producer, and that's like a change to the character.
And so, and like, especially if you know the history of like Peter Pan and the actor and everything, which if anyone doesn't know, Bobby Driscoll, who was a big time Disney kid, he was like kind of the original Mouseketeer, and kind of at one point he was basically Mickey Mouse was the face of animated Disney, and Bobby Driscoll was essentially the face of live action Disney. And he was the voice of Peter Pan in the classic Peter Pan movie. And he kind of got bad acne and aged, and Walt Disney was like, oh, you're not a cute little kid anymore. And he was kind of just left and abandoned, and he had a rough life, and he died early of an overdose. And it kind of, I definitely feel like the writers knew that and definitely incorporated that into their story of Peter Pan, the character, or the actor, I guess, definitely felt abandoned and left behind. And weirdly enough, the guy that played the kid that could never grow up was the only kind of tune that aged, which I thought was kind of a nice dichotomy. And just, there was a lot of layers to it. And one of the other great bits that we haven't touched on was Seth Rogen voiced Bob. And one of the times that his character, which was kind of like a play on the Beowulf movie, or like they even said it out loud, Polar Express, because they said his character had Polar Express eyes. His character gets knocked out, voiced by Seth Rogen, and then you see in the trailer, Pumbaa, the live action Pumbaa, appears over him, voiced by Simba, and then you see Mantis from Kung Fu Panda, also voiced by Seth Rogen, and then his character from Monsters vs. Aliens, BLB, voiced by Seth Rogen, appears, and I thought that was a great bit.
Yeah, that was a really good bit. That had me laughing for sure. And they all get like a line out, and then they all do the Seth Rogen laugh simultaneously. I thought that was really funny. The whole Uncanny Valley bit was very funny. You know, when they make jokes about like that specific era where they were still kind of figuring out human-like animation, and everything kind of looks real but not real, I think is how they kind of phrase it. And They make a reference to my all-time movie there, Cats. You know, you had a cameo from two of the cats from Cats. You got a Polar Express name drop, but I thought that was definitely funny. And I love that this movie feels like an overall tribute to just animation as a whole, and like animation is like a medium or a form of telling stories, you know, and whether it's the Uncanny Valley, whether it's like the old school black and white animation, whether it's, you know, the new, you call it a live action Pumbaa, but really it's just really, really detailed animation, you know, and I think that is an art form in itself. And this celebrates like all the highs and lows of animated storytelling in a way that I think feels really genuine and not necessarily like a commercial, because they're able to reach beyond the studios and just kind of celebrate the medium and bring in characters you love that from whether it's a claim, the main police chief is like a claymation, like a Gumby type of character that moves in like the stop motion kind of look, and he's like Play-Doh, so he's kind of sticky, and Seth is kind of like getting into him and he's getting deformed and misshapen, and other characters are 2D and they talk about how there's like a 3D surgery you can get to turn yourself into like the new modern high-tech 3D look. And I think it's a really fun scene. It's like a crime scene sequence where you get the claymation guy, then you get the 3D animated, and you get a 2D animated character, and then you get a live action human sticking their head in the window, and you realize like this, oh, of course, this whole scene is like miniature size because Chip and Dale are chipmunk size. And I thought it was very fun to see like five different versions of animation all colliding in like a singular scene. Even if you don't know the characters in the scene, you can appreciate like the collision of all these different forms of animation coming together.
Yeah, and there are some jokes, like I could have talked about this in the regular, but Dennis Haysbert as the voice of Zipper was just great, because in the show he was like the super high-pitched fly. And the idea of like, you could have put, oh, Monterey Jack and Gidget got married in real life, but just the thought of Zipper and Gidget were like the real love story behind the scenes was, I thought, was just a really good idea and really great, and I loved it. Anything else you want to say about Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers?
One thing I'll say here is that I really am looking forward to a sequel. Okay. Shockingly, the first time I've watched a Disney Plus original and been like, I want more of this, instead of like, let this thing end, please.
Yeah, I was definitely like, I'd be 100% on board for a sequel, like if they like have to go on another mystery or something, but I'd also like be 100% down if they want to do a TV show that was in this world. It doesn't necessarily have to be Chip and Dale focused, but if it was like have them cameo and it could be set in this world, I'd be definitely down for.
Yeah, and I'd be down for the next movie to be much more in line with the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Like, you have the whole team kind of back together, and you have a character saying like, oh, I'm going to start my own detective agency. So you're pretty much set up at the end for like, okay, now the Rescue Rangers are going to like in real life start going on like these missions together. And I would love to see the next movie kind of be like, okay, the team is set. Now they just have a mission to go on. And you've gotten the world set up. You've gotten the kind of rules of it set up. So I would love to see a sequel. And I would wonder if the sequel would go further into getting cameos, or if the other studios would be like, okay, no, we gave you one, but you can't use it again. And it'll be curious to see what the next step of this franchise is, because this feels like a big success. It feels like people are really liking this. Even people who spend their days hating Disney all day are liking this. So I definitely expect this to be a hit for Disney Plus.
Yeah. One of the things I'm curious about if we do get a sequel is, other than Pete and Scrooge McDuck, we didn't really get any of the like quote unquote like main Disney. Like, there was no Mickey, Donald, Goofy, Max, Daisy, any of those type of characters. So I'd be really intrigued if we were to get a sequel, if we would see those characters appear at all. Because Disney I think is that very would be a protective good move over those like family of characters.
I think that would be a good move for sure, because they are very protective and they haven't really done like a lot with those characters in the last few years, so it would be nice to see them again. And I think that's a perfect spot, because you can kind of just bring them in and out. You don't necessarily have to do a lot with the character. You can just have them show up for a scene, maybe like whatever mystery they solve takes them to some other part of the Toon world, and this is like the Disneyfied version where everything looks kind of like, you know, a happy Disney world type of thing. I'm really curious what happens next, and I am genuinely excited for a sequel to this. I hope it's a movie, though. I'd rather have a movie than a TV show because I think that brings the budget a bit more.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, the, I'm watching the thing. How did we not talk about Paul Rudd in Ant-Man?
He's very charismatic with ants.
Yeah, but that would be the plot I would do is Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers. Mickey Mouse is, like, this big time. He's basically, like, the George Clooney of this world, like this big time Hollywood star, kind of almost classic, kind of semi-retired, and he goes missing, and who can find him but his old friends Chip and Dale.
This also makes me want to see a Kingdom Hearts show. You know, it's time. Yeah. Bring it to life.
Yeah. But yeah. Anything else to say about this last, I guess, month in Disney Plus?
No, I'm glad we're back on it though. It'll be a fun month to cover stuff with Obi-Wan coming out, and it's always fun to get the little things that we miss out on, you know, and little shows here and there. So I'm glad we're back, Joe. I hope we can keep it up for a little while at least, because it looks like there's a lot to talk about right now.
All right, and one thing I was going to say earlier, but I did some research, and one of the things throughout the show is that Dale left the show because he wanted to do Double O Dale, and I guess Double O Dale was never going to be a thing. But they did want to do Double O Duck with kind of like a Donald Duck spinoff. But they found out that Double O was a trademark owned by Ian Fleming's estate. And so that pitch and that idea eventually became Darkwing Duck. So Double O thing was something that Disney wanted to do. It wasn't something that the writers pulled out of thin air. So
give us more Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, give us... Oh my God, they team up with Darkwing Duck in the sequel.
Look, he was in the post-credit scene.
Yeah, he was. You know? I had just watched the post-credit scene. And so that's how long the movie is, I literally hit play about 5 minutes before we went live, and now it's literally playing the final credits. So I think that wraps up our show for today, and I don't have anything else to say. So without further ado, goodbye. Hey, thank you for watching the Movie Change Up podcast. We'd really appreciate if you liked, commented, subscribed, and shared us with anyone you think might be into what we're doing over here. Thank you. Have a nice day.